Hi, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of a brand new Behind the Numbers show, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Basis Technologies. I'm one of your co-hosts, Insider Intelligence Principal Analyst Susie David Canyon.
And I'm your other co-host, Principal Analyst Andrew Lipsman. Today is Wednesday, December 22nd, and you're listening to the new bi-weekly retail show that will talk about how retail is colliding with every part of our lives, from the emerging world of retail media to how shopping on social media is evolving, to how the relationship between in-store and online shopping is maturing, and more.
Today, we're going to discuss a retail concept, brand loyalty, and how that's been impacted by the pandemic. That'll be our first segment.
And in the second half of the show, we'll unveil our first ever ranking segment, more specifically, the top three retail battles for 2022.
On future episodes, we'll also be speaking to a plethora of retail practitioners from a bunch of leading companies. And of course, we'll be doing more in-person store visits like the ones we did in the last episode.
Every episode in 2022 will feature a combination of these different segments, from a retail concept, to a ranking, to an interview, to an in-person store visit.
So let's get things started for today's episode. In our first segment, we're going to be talking about loyalty and how the pandemic impacted that. There have been lots and lots of numbers thrown out there, right, Andrew? And the last one I think we've seen that is most marking is the McKinsey study, where 40% of consumers changed the brand that they were purchasing. And more importantly, 40% of those have decided to stick to their new brand. So clearly, customer loyalty may or may not have lapsed a little bit, depending on how you define it, over the pandemic. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I have talked quite a bit in the past about the broader concept of brand loyalty and what that means for today's modern consumer. And I think we'll unpack that a bit. But as you note, the pandemic was probably the most disruptive event that we've seen to brand loyalty in a long time, because it forced consumers, really, if they wanted to buy in a certain category, to try alternatives because of the supply chain, that products they wanted weren't there, or their whole mindset and their context was different. So they just veered in different directions. So I think we're just sitting in the midst of a moment of great change in consumer brand loyalty. And I think it's going to be interesting as far as how this plays out. When you think about brand loyalty, Susie, what kind of jumps out to you as the most important aspects of it?
So I think this is the question that we should be answering, right? How do we define loyalty, and how should brands and retailers be thinking about that? And there are lots of different ways. For me, it's about building trust, and ultimately it's helping a brand's bottom line in terms of repeat purchases, buying more from the brand, and most especially is being a brand champion and then, you know, telling your friends, doing positive reviews and bringing more people into your brand. But I do think that there are other ways that we can define brand loyalty.
Yeah, I mean, I think with a lot of consumer goods, it's kind of the share of wallet. Are you dominating, you know, the purchases that a consumer has within a certain category? That's maybe the most traditional way of thinking about it. I like where one of your definitions was going, which is really just about recurring purchase. I mean, there are so many categories, especially if we think about lifestyle categories as an example, where people are going to buy from a bunch of different brands, right? As you've said before, people don't just get dressed head to toe in a single brand. So if we just acknowledge the fact that people will have some sort of promiscuity amongst brands, I think the real question then is, do they like your brand enough that they want to continue buying it on some sort of repeatable cycle?
Well, and it's also like, is it that they're after this particular CPG brand? So it doesn't matter where they're buying it from, that's what they're looking for. Or are they loyal to the store? And so if they can't find brand A, then they'll just buy a substitute at that same store. And so that's even trickier for retailers who are carrying other people's brands, is how do you compete when so many others are also selling that brand?
And grocery is such an interesting example, because grocery is where we think about the importance of brands and what you literally reach for at the shelf when you're presented with, you know, dozens of different options within a category. But sometimes the retailer itself is where the brand loyalty lies. I would say, you know, 75% of my grocery buying is Trader Joe's, and it's dominated by private label. But, you know, it's Trader Joe's brand that really sticks out and keeps me loyal. So I end up buying whatever their option is or their best option is within the category by virtue of the fact that I'm choosing that retailer, not the specific brand.
I think it's that bagel mix that gets you going over and over again to Trader Joe's, no?
I mean, isn't everybody who tries that addicted to it?
I think so. And I think for clothes, it's also something around style and fit, right? Once you know, and I've had this debate a lot, so let me ask you this question. When you know that you need to buy a specific outfit for a specific occasion, how do you go about shopping for that? Do you go by brand? Do you go by, like, if you're looking for a suit, do you just go to the suit section? How does that work for you?
I mean, this is such a great question. So first off, I am far from fashionable, so I'm probably the worst person to ask here. But when I think about the jeans that I buy, I have one brand that they just fit me. I know it, and I do it by default. There's probably better jeans for me out there in the world, but that's where I go back for something that I wear a lot. And I know I'm always going to have to buy a couple of pairs every year. But then, you know, if I needed to get more dressed up for an occasion, I need help. So, you know, maybe it's going to a Nordstrom or something like that, where you know you're going to be brand loyal to the experience that they're going to give you, not so much that I need to have a certain label that I need to wear. What are your thoughts on loyalty in those categories?
Well, so this is the thing. I think I'm an outlier in that I would go to the Nordstrom, not especially fashionable, but there are brands that I know that I love and that fit me well and that I am willing to pay for. And so I find that that's a good value. And to save time and energy, I go straight to those brands. I look for what I need. And if they don't have it, I sadly leave the store. I don't go to an adjacent, you know, the way the stores are organized, usually it's like adjacent brands that are similar enough so that if you don't find what you're looking for, you'll go to the next brand. But the point you're raising is amazing in terms of, again, is it, are we retailer loyal or are we brand loyal? And is that intermixed or are they two completely different things? Which leads us to one of the other conversations we've talked about. It's this idea around forced loyalty and how are retailers sort of forcing loyalty upon consumers? So like the buy faster button where you just hit the button and before you know it, it's already arrived at your door.
Right. Well, this is right in the e-commerce experience. That's also been very disruptive to loyalty because you're not constrained by what's presented to you on the shelf in the store, right? There's a more endless aisle. So you have a lot more options theoretically. But then once you've decided what you're going to buy, I don't know if you have this experience with Amazon for kind of household and commodity goods. Amazon gives you the subscribe and save model. So some people just opt into that continuity of loyalty. Or if you're more like me, I don't like being inundated with things. I like to kind of control the time schedule that I get them. But I do go right back into my order history and order the item that I've ordered before. So I guess I'm exhibiting loyalty in that sense because they make it easier. Now, something like the pandemic has perhaps given an opportunity to disrupt that habit. But, you know, I will just kind of default to what's easy when it's especially a low consideration consumer good.
Well, and I think that's the key, right? It's this idea around easy, convenience, fast. And even those subscribe, it's like subscribe and save. So get what you want. They usually even make you choose the time frame. So 3 months, 6 months, depending on the item and how frequently they think you're going to need it. And then you save money and you're sticking with them and that brand. So it really is quite clever.
You're making me realize something as you say that it's almost like the selection is the hard part. And that's where loyalty comes in. But the other dimensions of retail that are important to people are price and convenience. And in that sense, Amazon kind of takes those factors out of the equation because the price, especially if you're saving, you know, is going to be the right price. And then the convenience when it's there next day, you know, unless you really need something that day, you're going to be fulfilled on those other two dimensions.
And then that leads us to the other thing that we've been talking a lot about in terms of membership programs and how that also helps drive loyalty indirectly, right? And so if you're a member of Amazon Prime, you're maybe more likely to go and buy your household goods there and even some more staples like fashion or school supplies than go to a Target or Walmart because they make it so easy and you save.
Absolutely. And we think about loyalty programs, a lot of them, right? It's about fulfilling those kind of core dimensions. One of the other things that I'm thinking a lot about with brand loyalty is how much are we loyal to the product versus the experience? I think maybe experience is something that we value a lot. And when you find a brand or a retailer that fulfills that promise, that you want to be loyal to them and you'll give them more of your business in the future. So some of the loyalty programs I'm thinking a lot about these days would be something like Lululemon, where they have a lot of additional aspects to their membership program, including the ability to take classes in many of their retail locations. So that's really creating a high level, almost VIP-like experience that is something that can keep consumers loyal and obviously coming back.
And you know what? I looked up, as we were getting ready for the segment, I looked up loyalty, and one of the definitions really does talk a lot about creating a positive relationship between the brand and or retailer and the consumer so that they want to come back. And that positive relationship can be everything from an experience to they have good value and you feel good about, or they have the right mission that you believe in, the right way of thinking about social values that you believe in. And all of that sort of coming together brings consumers closer to a brand. And when you have a positive sort of like warm and fuzzy feeling against a brand, you are more likely to continue shopping there.
I think that's absolutely true. You bring up this notion of relationship, and it's amazing when brands can create that relationship with consumers. But I think there's probably also a lot of cases where there's never going to be much of a quote unquote relationship. So I'm curious to what extent you think loyalty can exist for brands that you may not care about very deeply or have a real emotional attachment to.
So I think it depends on the category, right? So insurance, who cares, right? You just want the best deal and you're locked into a contract. So anything that's contractual, it doesn't really matter. You're looking for a good deal and you're going to move on, assuming they meet your basic requirements. But then when it comes to like consumables, then of course it matters, right? You want to make sure that you're getting not only the best bang for your buck, but that you're enjoying the product. And once you've found, for example, dried mangoes, those are hard to find good ones. So now that I've found my brand, I will only shop there and I will not go anywhere else. And it is not Trader Joe's. I've tried those, but they're not as great.
I was just going to ask. Yeah.
The Target.
Really?
I mean, it's a little bit of a toss-up between the Target private label and the Costco's private label. Both of them are good, but I can never eat like a 12-pound mango bag. So I stick to the Target ones.
That's so good to know. It is pretty variable. You would think Trader Joe's would have that one down, but they're fine, but not great.
So I guess the last thing before we wrap is thinking about how do you measure loyalty? Is there a way that brands and retailers can measure that outside of NPS scores, for example? I mean, that's like the classic. The net promoter scores are important to see how satisfied are consumers and are they willing to talk about your brand in a positive way with other people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things, you know, brand tracking, brand affinity scores, and just doing constant surveys to keep a pulse on how people feel about your brand is important. And you can see notable changes or downturns in your brand. But it is one of those things that's really difficult. And it ultimately shows up, I think, more in your customer data if you're looking at things like repeat purchase and, you know, lifetime value.
I totally agree. And even share of wallet, like you were saying before.
Absolutely.
I know that we talk about this all the time. It's really critical for retailers and brands to think about this. And as you heard from McKinsey, people switched and some of those who switched stayed. And so what do you do as a retailer to make sure that you keep the ones who switched to you, or how do you lure back your consumer will be critical. Well, I think that's all the time we have for our first segment.
Well, with that, I think it's time for a quick word from our sponsor, Basis Technologies, and then we'll be right back.
Today's podcast is made possible by Basis Technologies. Basis Technologies has created a digital advertising platform that connects people, automates processes, and unifies channels, bringing together programmatic, site direct, search, social, and CTV into one single interface. And through the power of automation, Basis enables brands, agencies, and publishers to build and operate a healthy, secure, efficient, and profitable advertising organization. Ready to take control of your advertising? Just go to basis.net today. That's www.basis.net. Basis Technologies, the future of advertising has arrived.
All right, Andrew, time for the second half. Let's look at three of the different retail battles that we're looking at and keeping an eye on for 2022. So first, I mean, this was hard, right? Because we thought through there are so many combinations of retailers and platforms that we're keeping an eye on. But I think our number one choice was Amazon versus Shopify. although probably everybody thinks about Amazon versus Walmart, we picked Shopify.
We can't do the obvious thing, right? Amazon and Walmart is the first one that comes to mind. And I think there will be plenty of battles on that front. But yeah, Shopify is maybe a little bit of a dark horse here. I see Shopify and Amazon. I mean, it's interesting because Shopify has always billed itself as arming the rebels, i.e. direct-to-consumer brands and all the independent retailers who are not selling on Amazon. So there's always been this kind of conflict in terms of how they've presented themselves in the ecosystem. And Shopify is huge, right? By GMV, it would be second only to Amazon and ahead of eBay and Walmart even. So it's a really formidable opponent. I think that the battle lines are going to get drawn even clearer with Amazon this year. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. I think they started, you know, lifting their swords in 2021, and now they're really going at it. You know, when I think about Shopify, I think about it more like a online storefront originally, right? Helping little brands build stores in a easy way where you can keep your branding and keep your imaging. And then Shopify realized that they need to add more tools. So they've started adding tools and they're really keeping track, and they produce a lot of research actually. And they're keeping track of the customer journey and they're mapping it. And now they're adding all kinds of plug and play to map to that so that they can make it easier for a brand. Whereas Amazon is really just about eyeballs. It's all cookie cutter. Your individual brands are on the same platform and they're all vying for the same consumer to buy that same item. And so it's all about price wars internally on Amazon, which I think Amazon loves and wants to continue to make happen. And so I think they're two completely different ways of organizing as a brand. And we know some brands use both. But I don't know, what do you think? If you're a small brand and you can be on both, what do you think makes sense?
I think most brands, if they want to be independent, they will stick to Shopify, right? And Shopify has always been the infrastructure. What's interesting to me now is that we've seen some recent moves from Shopify that suggest they're becoming more of a marketplace like Amazon and starting to encroach on that same sort of turf. A couple of things that I would point to, I mean, obviously, Shopify has done a great job of building out all the tools, as you mentioned, that infrastructure. And so it can compete with Amazon on a lot of those logistics dimensions. But the Shop app is starting to act a bit like a marketplace because it's a point of entry for people who might want to shop across brands. So now that Shopify would be kind of owning the user experience or the front door into shopping, much like Amazon does. We'll have to wait and see how successful it is in that use case, but that's certainly what Shopify is trying to do. And then also Shopify is getting into advertising. And you know, a lot of the complaints from sellers are how Amazon has all these services that ultimately kind of make you pay a tax, right? You have to pay for placement just to get seen on Amazon. Shopify could be moving in a similar direction. So I wonder, as I cast this forward this year and a few years into the future, how much of these companies start to really compete on that marketplace model?
Right. And then you could also say that Amazon is trying to do some of the same things as Shopify in terms of, you know, trying to make shopping a little bit more fun and more authentic and curated. And I mean, I know you guys can't see Andrew smiling. Amazon and fun don't usually go together. It's usually more easy and convenient and fast, but not usually curated and fun. But they're trying so hard to have that type of experience as well with their platform for live streaming and a few other different tools and trying to plug into social media to try and bring that brand essence for each of the sellers.
It's such a great point. The question, you know, can Shopify become Amazon faster than Amazon can become Shopify? And I think that's probably a nice segue into our number two battle because the same question is at play. Number two, Susie, you want to tell the audience what it is?
To do the big reveal.
The big reveal.
Well, I'm happy to because one of the companies like Shopify is Canadian. And our second one was Lululemon versus Peloton. And what's going to happen in 2022, especially with all the litigation?
Yeah, so they can't stop suing and countersuing each other, can they?
It's kind of funny, actually. And I'm surprised they're not suing and countersuing around the mirror and the bike, right? It's just about the clothes, the patent on the clothes.
Right, for now. We'll see what happens next. But these are companies that have been partners, right? They were very complementary. Yes. A few years ago. And the brands obviously occupy a similar space, very affluent, you know, lifestyle sort of brand. But yeah, they're getting into each other's businesses. I mean, you mentioned the key one, which was when Lululemon acquired Mirror, getting into the digital fitness game. And then now recently, Peloton is getting into the apparel game in a big way.
Well, and I think to add insult to injury, Peloton used to sell Lululemon and just would put a little P to brand the clothes. And now they're selling their own clothes with their own private label brand that, if for the listeners who don't know, Lululemon is very upset and has sued against some of the bras and leggings from a patent perspective, to which Peloton has countered and said, your designs are so basic, you can't patent that, which is kind of funny if you think about it.
So, I mean, already a flurry of activity here just in the last couple of months of the year. What do you think is going to happen in 2022? Are tensions going to simmer down, or you think they're going to ratchet up?
Well, that's so funny because I was going to ask you, who do you think is going to win? And I think given all of the context around Peloton today and all the other allegations that are happening around that, I think Peloton has a long road ahead, and if they need to protect the little that they have. So I think it's going to be a long, drawn-out battle.
I think that I actually am pretty optimistic about both of these brands long-term. You know, strategically for Lululemon, that's more established, in some ways it was kind of smart to knock a key competitor off its game. And I think that there are certainly some stumbles that Peloton will have to make up ground for. But I think both these companies are the future. They've got great brands. They've got great apparel and fitness digital media offerings. And I think that's where the future of this whole category is going to go. So they both position themselves well to take a huge share of what I think is a massive market that's only going to grow from here.
Right. And so that leads us to our third battle. And in fact, it's around the future of delivery and quick commerce. Andrew, do you want to walk us through who we're pitting against who?
Well, it's not just one versus another. This is the battle royale. And we have Instacart versus DoorDash versus GoPuff.
Right.
All of these, you know, I guess it's the battle for grocery delivery, but faster and faster and more convenient grocery delivery. And everybody's approaching it from a little bit of a different angle.
Yeah. Instacart partners with grocery stores to pick and fulfill. So pick the items from the grocery store and then deliver them to your house, versus the DoorDash model, which is to just pick it up from the grocer directly and drive it to the consumer who made the request. And then GoPuff, I know you love this business model, so I'm going to let you talk about that.
Well, I don't even know that I love the business models themselves. I love the innovation that's happening in quick commerce. And I think that GoPuff smartly is vertically integrated. So they own all the inventory, and that's what allows them to get those quick commerce deliveries out in 15 minutes. I've used it a few times and it's kind of a wow experience. So I think this is what everybody's trying to figure out, is how can we fulfill that experience and do it really quickly. But also, listen, a lot of times people want a full grocery shopping experience, and that's where Instacart shines. DoorDash is trying to do it all. They started really in restaurant delivery, but they've done really well in cleaning up in that market. So they feel like they can do more. I mean, I just think that it's such an interesting market right now because everybody has relative strengths and weaknesses. And this is one where I can't even tell you who I think is going to come out the winner. I mean, I think all of them are strong companies, and there's a place for all of them. But if you ask me, like, who's really going to dominate grocery delivery in the future? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it's an interesting idea for DoorDash to try and do a little bit of everything. I don't know if that weakens all of their services or if that just makes them less at risk when something tanks, you know, because they can do lots of different things. I think the GoPuff model, which you're right, there are lots of others. I haven't used them. I use Joker, but we picked GoPuff because it is the one that everybody refers to in this space. I think quick commerce, as everybody might have heard at our MTA, at our webinar, is one of the things that we are keeping an eye on. And I think that there are lots of other categories that they can go in, but it is a tough business model in terms of density of population and where can they actually have it. And they have to keep all of the inventory themselves. And so, like, how do they know? They must have such great data to know what they need, where, when, so that you can actually get that item in 15 minutes. It's crazy.
My ultimate question is, to what extent are consumers going to move across different types of buying experiences within a single app, right? When I need a full grocery order, do I just go to Instacart? When I want a quick order, do I just go to GoPuff? DoorDash, as you said, it's a big question whether or not, I mean, people know to order restaurant delivery from them. Will they order groceries and other categories? So to me, that's a question. They've executed incredibly well. But that's the biggest challenge I think that they and any of them are going to have is can they only really fulfill that one niche of their market, or can they move beyond that? If DoorDash can do it and they do it well, you know, maybe they're in best position to become something approximating a commerce super app.
You know what? I think that's a great way to end the show. We've been talking about super apps as the upcoming trend. And so there you have it. You heard it here first. DoorDash might be the next, I mean, whether it's DoorDash or Uber, right? I feel like those types of companies where they do all in one app will definitely win. So that's the end of our show for today. Thanks everyone who listened.
We'll be back in a few weeks, January 12th, with another episode of Reimagining Retail. Tune in tomorrow for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Basis Technologies.